Phantom House. It's the place for podcasts.
Welcome to the living room. Please make yourself at home. This week, I spoke with Media Jeweler. We talked about constantly evolving as a band, live versus recorded music, and when your drummer just leaves the house during a set. This one was a long time in the making, and I'm so glad we finally got to have this band on the podcast. You can find their music at mediajeweler.bandcamp.com. Let's go, dudes. Y'all can start whenever.
Cool. Okay. Did y'all just lose a channel, right channel of your headphone?
No.
All right.
So can we start by having you all introduce yourselves and what you play and the band?
I'm Sam and I play guitar.
And the band Media Jeweler.
I'm Tom, I play bass and sing. And Sam also sings.
I also sing.
I don't sing. I play drums. I'm Bryson.
I'm James. I play guitar.
Cool. So I want to start with how did Media Jeweler become a band / project? Like, where did you all meet each other, and how did this thing happen?
Me and James, who plays guitar and sings, were another band called Moon Pearl, and then that band stopped being a band. The same time as that, I had recently bought a kick drum pedal from this guy named Colin, and he was talking about how he wanted to be in like a weird band that wasn't a hardcore band, because he had just been in a bunch of hardcore bands. And I was like, well, do I have something to offer you? And then that band started. And our bass player from that band also joined, or the saxophone player from Moon Pearl also became the bass player of Media Jeweler. Mm-hmm. And then that was how the band started, but... He's not that guy.
I'm not a saxophone player.
And he's not Colin.
I don't sell kick pedals.
So then how did you two become part of the band then? How did that happen?
Yeah, I've known Sam and James for a long time. Like, we played music together just been in the same like circle for probably like 10 years or so. Mm-hmm. And so when the other bassist left, they asked me to do it. And I was in a period of my life where I was joining every band that offered. And
uh-oh.
So I was in 6 bands at that point.
Oh, no.
But then this is one of them. Now I'm only in 3. So it's
hard to say.
Yeah.
It depends what being in a band entails.
It is, yeah. It's hard to say. Yeah. And then
I joined the band last year. Colin, who sold the kick pedal to Sam.
The kick pedal was very integral to this band starting.
Really?
Yeah, because like otherwise Colin and I would have never met up to talk about music.
And there is a kick pedal that is used in this band.
Yeah.
We use a kick pedal.
Yeah, I do use one.
We all use a kick pedal.
I knew Colin from high school, and last year he just asked me to do cover for him on a tour, and I said yes.
It was love at first sight.
Yeah. At first I was like, I had listened to Media Jeweler. I played a show with them with my old band in like 2013, and I knew about Media Jeweler and then never thought I would be playing with them. Mm-hmm. Colin asked me to do the tour. At first I was like, you know, really
with like 3
intimidated.
Weeks notice.
Yeah. Intimidated by learning the songs and like going on this tour. I'd never been on tour before. So I just slept on it. Didn't text him back. Woke up the next day and was like, you know what? Let's do this. And just from there, I went on the tour, loved it. Mm-hmm. And then Colin didn't want to do it anymore. And I said, I would love to do this. And that's how I'm here.
So you were in the other, you were drumming for other bands before this one, right?
Just one. Yeah. Okay. After high school, I just started a band. It lived for like a year. We had a good time, but then, you know, everybody went their separate ways. It was really fresh off of being released to the world.
Yeah. I think it's fair that you say this band is intimidating because with the thesis statement of this band being, let's make something weird. I imagine there's just a lot to jump into, especially if there's like a previous sure. catalog already.
Yeah. And I've always been into kind of like the uncanny type of, you know, style, just not playing straight through a song, you know, mm-hmm. traditional structure of a song. I feel at home now.
We probably would have swiped right on each other on Tinder. Our band and
musicians Tinder. Yeah. It's a match.
Yeah. Yeah. And immediately, like it seemed like, when after that tour, we were able to write music together, like as if we had been together for a long time. I think it's really important. Sam and Jim's
very magical
duality on the guitars is like really important to the sound, and just like it's really easy to work with. You know, they just communicate really easily.
Yeah, and me and Bryson have a similar kind of axis going on. Like I'm basically standing on top of him when we play. So
yeah.
But it was that immediate writing new songs already. Like, well, there wasn't a period of time when it was just like playing the songs, and then it like you pretty much just like jumped in and was like, okay,
right,
here's my creative vision that I'm adding to this.
Yeah, felt really weird to play other people, you know, someone else's beats throughout the whole tour for mm-hmm. 5 weeks. It just felt like I was a robot, and then I was just ready to break out and like write with
you
them.
Hatched,
yeah,
and then blossomed.
I was in the incubator for a while.
This was a mixed metaphor.
You hatched and blossomed. What kind of bird flower is this?
A robot bird flower.
So what is the writing process for Media Jeweler, right? Just because I have no idea.
Well,
it changes.
Yeah, the first album was all like, it was a bunch of like kind of leftover stuff from Moon Pearl for the most part. Mm. And then it was just like, we would be like, okay, there's this. Oop, nope. That was like a thing. And then it was like, okay, let's do that a bunch of times and see where that goes and record it. And then I would take home the recording and cut it up in a bunch of different ways and then send it to everyone and be like, how about this? And then we would practice that. And then that would develop its own legs. And then that would get cut up. Mm-hmm. So I always kind of saw it as like chipping away at like marble.
Yeah.
Kind of like sculpting a song.
And we kind of like, at least since I've been in the band, I feel like we use the metaphor of it. Like we put a song through a blender. And that's like kind of what the writing process is. Like we'll write it like a normal band kind of, and then over the next like 3 months we'll just like pick at it and like mess it up.
Every nuance.
Yeah. I think also a lot like a way that we write songs is like we'll do something really stupid and then we'll stop doing it and someone will be like, that was dumb. All right, let's just like try to make it into a thing, and then it'll become a thing.
Yeah, let's turn something like really ugly.
That's happened so many times. We're just like, that was messed up. Let's do it. Let's do
Such
it.
Such as the Nirvana thing we were doing earlier.
Yeah. That was literally, we've done that for like 30 minutes at practice before.
So really just like making iterations of like whatever you like latch onto essentially.
Yeah.
And just seeing how far you can push that thing until it's like either something
kind of cool or very, very stupid.
Yeah.
But then even like when it becomes a song, like it's kind of unpredictable. Like maybe 3 months later, someone will be like, hey, I don't like this one part of this one song that we've been playing for 3 months. And then we'll spend an entire practice on like 15 seconds trying to get it right. And then sometimes we'll abandon that and sometimes it'll be part of the song now. So, I don't know.
Yeah.
It's weird. You're saying like they can...
They morph.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It'll still change even if it's like, we have the song already.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Huh. Yeah. How does that happen very often? Like, because I imagine like there's limitations.
Kinda.
I feel like there's limitations, especially like in the fact that there's a point when like these songs end up recorded, and so then there's like an official version of what a song is supposed to be.
Yeah.
But if you have this desire to keep changing them, do you run up against that often, or is that an issue at all?
I wouldn't say super often.
Yeah, I feel like the songs that have already been recorded have changed since we've recorded them, but not in like huge ways.
Like, just like kind of naturally.
Tempos mm-hmm. and stuff. Mm-hmm. That one we just played is like probably twice the speed as the recorded version, I feel like. And maybe not that much, but like it's a lot faster. But I feel like it's like structural stuff that happens leading up to the recording, at least so far.
Yeah. We'll like mess with like small parts in like kind of unambiguous ways, like we'll slow down a section or speed up a section or like double or halve the length of parts maybe, mm-hmm. but we won't like really mess with it too much mm-hmm. after it's recorded for the most part. So far, at least. Not for lack of want, just like lack of time, probably.
And then how much of like this editing, how much editing is there in like a post-recording sort of setting? Like, okay, you have everything that you think you're going to get. Like, I want to know, like, when a song feels finished for you in, like, an album-making process. Because I feel like for this band, there's, like, this desire to keep just, like, messing with something.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah. I'm wondering, like, when do you know something's done?
I think we would all probably have different answers.
Yeah, I think we probably would.
Well, yeah. What's the answer?
Yeah, let's hear all the answers, I guess.
We've recorded two albums at the same studio, and both times we spent 3 days doing it. So we tracked for 2 days. And it overdubs, and then we mixed and listened to the mix mm-hmm. and signed off on it. So for me, when those 3 days are up, it's done. It's just kind of done when it's literally done.
Mm-hmm.
And for me, it's never done.
Yeah, I say the same.
Yeah, and I think that's true of like all music, pretty much.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah, it doesn't stop. In the next song we're about to play, it'll be unfinished because there's parts where I will never be comfortable with what I'm doing there. It just kind of it's improvised in that section every single time.
Mm-hmm.
But when it comes time to record, I will have picked out my favorite ones.
Mm. I see.
Favorite, you know, variations. But I feel like it's even after the recording, it's like that's for the recording. Now I'm going to continue to change it every time.
Sorry, go ahead.
No, you go ahead.
I was going to say it's going to be interesting when we record our first album with Bryson because me and James have done both albums together. Tom, James, and I have done one of the albums together, and the four of us haven't done any of the albums together.
Mm-hmm.
So it'll be interesting to see what the dynamic shift is in the recording process
at
that time.
Yeah. And then, so does like a recorded version feel then like extremely different from like when you, like, is it just a separate thing?
To me, it's a separate thing.
With the live experiences?
Me too, yeah. And, like, I haven't listened to the recordings in a while, and when I happen to, it's kind of like, what's going on here?
Yeah. It's a totally different feeling.
Yeah.
100%.
In what way? Can you put words to that?
Well, I think the most recent album, to me, sounds very immediate and sounds very live. So, in that regard, it does overlap with playing in a room live, but the feeling is compressed,
mm-hmm.
I think, by the nature of the songs and the process of recording.
I think our live performances can be pretty chaotic.
Yes.
And the recordings are like the polished version of that
chaotic.
Chaos.
Yeah, they're like a captured version of it. They're mm-hmm. like a picture of chaos versus like being in the middle of it. I guess I was kind of like thinking of some metaphor like capturing a butterfly versus like just watching it fly away. And I don't know if that's really applicable at all. But
yeah, it's pretty poetic.
Damn, Jim.
I mean, that checks out in my experience too. Like from the Media Jeweler shows that I've seen, I think the live experience is like fun and interesting and like a sight to behold. Like just from all the times I've been, it's just like there's usually a lot going on. There's always like someone else there doing some sort of other live performative element to it.
What's the craziest one you've seen?
The craziest one I've seen was the time that you played here, and then I forget the name of your friend who was doing some sign spinning while they were here, but then they like hurt themselves and then they were bleeding at some point. Yeah.
Wasn't Colin doing it?
I think you were spinning the sign and you threw it and it hit Colin in the forehead.
Mm-hmm. And he had to get stitches in his cheeks.
Yeah, exactly. Like,
I don't think I was at that one. That sounds crazy.
Yeah. Like there's enough chaos happening that like someone was legitimately very injured at the show.
I think we stopped playing so he could leave and go to the hospital.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
That's pretty crazy. James gets hurt all the time during our sets. Oh, yeah. He climbed a tree once and like his arm was all messed up for a while. He still have a scar?
Big brown spot.
Oh, wow. Yeah, that's quite a scar.
That's from like April?
Yeah.
It's pretty gnarly.
You can see the scar, unfortunately.
Gnarled.
It's bigger than you think it is, listeners. But yeah, so I think that really speaks to like what kind of band this is.
Yeah, and that stuff happens in the studio. Like, there's a song on the most recent album where, like, me and James are just throwing sleigh bells around the room with the mic in between us, and you were throwing a cymbal on the ground. You know, like, it just swelling. Like comes across different when it's like captured, mm-hmm. I think, versus when you're there and the crazy stuff is happening in front of your face and maybe at you a little bit.
I think we strive to be as dynamic as possible in like all things. But that's hard. I feel like there's a threshold with recording for that.
Yeah.
And live, there basically isn't one.
Yeah. It's true. Okay, can you guys play another thing for us, please?
Yeah. Tightrope?
Thank you. Great. So I think what I'm wondering is, when you make albums in this band or collections of songs, like, what's it seemingly there seems to be a concept behind everything, and I'm wondering what that is. Just because in the like the past two albums, there seems to have been a lot going on, and I haven't really been able to parse it. So I'm wondering, like, what that is exactly.
I think it kind of comes together. It doesn't like a you don't. There's that not, comes after the fact.
Yeah, there's not like a vision that we set out to. It's kind of just kind of like making the thing and then figuring out what it means as one.
Yeah,
like after
assembling it into one.
Yeah.
Thing like putting it in a basket. Putting the basket on someone's front door. And the thing is a baby.
I think the first album was a lot about wanting to escape from reality. And the second one was about dealing with it.
Yeah. Well, I guess maybe dealing with that's a little bit impossible to fully do.
The maybe? Third one, to me, is coming to mean like, well, you gotta.
Yeah.
But also, fuck that.
Yeah, I mean, the second one was like, it was made in a pretty crazy time, like macro and micro. Like the band lineup shifted pretty drastically.
Yeah.
I think all of us were dealing with some weird stuff in our lives. Like 2016 was a fucked up year in the world, you know? And that's kind of when we started writing it. So I feel like it's, it reflects that. And in general, is like kind of a reaction to the first album. Of just like, yep, shit's real.
Yeah, I was wondering about that because I think, like, even on the Bandcamp, I think you wrote about, or whoever wrote about, it felt like that, like, that typical thing that happens with bands where you have to write your, like, second album, and there's, like, that follow-up thing that you have to do where you're not really sure exactly what the voice of the second group of songs is going to be, and so you feel kind of like you're trying to grab at something, but you're not really sure what that thing is yet. So I'm wondering if you can speak to that.
Well, I feel that way about every song, I think.
Oh, yeah?
In general. It's like, what is this going to be when it's quote-unquote done? I think it's hard for me to formulate thoughts in general.
That's what the fourth album is going to be about.
I do see those two albums and whatever the next album when we have the next album ready. Mm-hmm. I think in my head they interlock in a very like deliberate like three part trilogy, which is the dumbest thing that I've said out loud to me.
No, but whatever. I love trilogies, yeah. Man.
I mean, trilogies are like a, like, you know, triangle is the most, the strongest shape.
It is the most stable shape.
Yeah. So, like, the, you know, the first one's like, oh no. And the second one's like, ugh. And the third one's like, no. and then that cycle probably repeats.
Hmm.
So, I think that's the best summary I can come up with. I don't know. I honestly have no idea if that answers the question at all.
Well, it's interesting hearing that, and then you saying that like there isn't a plan beforehand, and you kind of just like apply this meaning afterward. And I have trouble with that only because like I'm going to speak specifically to that first album where I'm like, you have a set of songs where they feel so intentional and cyclical, like the fact that there's like three songs that are like. Looking something,
yeah,
and then there's like reprisals and whatever, all kind of like going in throughout that album. And then I feel like the second album had less of that, but I'm assuming there's still this like intentionality of like taking a listener through what you're trying to say. So when you tell me that like you don't have a plan going into it, I don't want to believe
it,
like, you.
It starts coming up once there's like a handful of songs to work with.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think like we all like. This is a very deliberate band.
Yeah.
You know, and so I think even when we're going off the like off gut reaction, like there's a deliberateness to it just because that's how we approach doing the thing. I think there's always going to be an impulse to like bring some thematic unity to it. Mm-hmm. But we just like don't know what it is when we start, you know.
Yeah.
I think because we are also, we're deliberate, but we're also chaotic. That's kind of like what this band is about, is that like balance between the two.
That Venn diagram.
Yeah.
Or those two circles.
Yeah. Order, chaos, media jeweler, right?
there's your lead for this episode.
That's the album title.
Yeah.
It's album cover.
Yeah.
Okay, so then if with the third album, planned album being like that feeling of slamming your fist on the table and saying no, what does that mean? Like, what's like what is the plan for that? Like, what I'm assuming you've already started like writing songs, mm-hmm. and like how has that been different for this?
Well,
band?
It's our first set of songs with Bryson.
Yeah. How is he?
Almost all of them are new with Bryson. So
how's he doing?
Fantastic. Great. Unbelievably.
Yeah. It's time for your performance review. Great.
If Bryson was a restaurant, he would get a 5-star Yelp review. Mm-hmm. If Bryson was a dentist office.
If Bryson was a dentist office, and he is, he'd get 5 stars.
I would like to read the 1-star reviews that are always on those.
Sort by right. ranking. Sort by
let's win. Let's
lowest. What was the question?
What's different about writing this album as opposed to the previous one?
Well, in addition to this being the first set of songs written with Bryson, this is the first full set of songs written with Tom as well.
Yeah.
Oh, really? Oh, okay.
Yeah. Tom wrote about half the songs on the last album. Maybe a little bit more.
Yeah. Yeah.
So those are two like very...
There's a unit.
Yeah.
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 We feel good.
Yeah.
I think before, I personally like didn't always feel good, but now I feel good. That's my internal... Not about anybody else, just about myself.
Yeah.
In the band. I feel good about myself in this band. More than before. I don't know what that means.
Well,
yeah,
I mean
just the general confidence, I feel like, is what this hand slamming down saying no is, you know, like, we're just going to do, like, I feel like we're just, like, generally making decisions in the writing process, in the, like, being a band in general, that are, like, this is how we're doing it. Mm-hmm. Not, like, we're going to do it this way because...
Whatever reason.
Because that's how things are happening around us. It's like, I don't know. It feels like a more like confident deliberateness.
Yeah.
And just like as a whole for some reason. And so I feel like that kind of comes across in the music that we're writing now and the lyrics that Sam is writing. Like there's just a general, like album two is chaotic and we're kind of like, we have like a surer footing now. Just personally. And that like comes across because the, you know, the band is just like a bunch of people doing the thing. Mm-hmm. And so it's kind of like the sum of all of our situations.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I don't know if that makes sense.
Yeah. I'm wondering from the two of you, like as people who've been in this band the whole time, how do you think their choices differ like as musicians from the previous bassist and drummer? Like, do you think they make, I mean, obviously they do make different choices because everyone's different musicians, but like, can you peek, put words to like the type of things that they're doing that you think you're like, oh, like this might not have happened in a different version of Media Jeweler.
Definitely.
Well, like what?
Well, JT, the previous bassist, was a very incredible musician, mm-hmm. and he liked to show it. So I think he like dominated the writing process musically, and everything was kind of centered around the bass parts.
Mm-hmm. Bass parts would grow more complicated,
yeah,
over the course of the writing process.
Mm.
Whereas I'd rather just play in one note if I can. I'm a terrible musician. I hate to show it.
Well, so I mean, so there's like more. I'll put it this way: there's like more nuance. So you like will lean back.
I'll lean back. Yeah.
Yeah.
JT did not like to lean back, which is no, like he's a mad scientist genius.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, there's different flavors.
He liked to lean back literally.
Yeah, he liked to sit down and lay against the practice space door when we practice, and after like 30 minutes.
And eat French fries during the set. Love you, JT.
You should describe how you're different than Colin.
Yeah.
We're all still very good friends with Colin.
Oh, yeah.
Colin is...
And JT.
Near and dear. And JT. Not JT.
I don't really know where to start with that. I don't really, yeah. Like when me and you knew each other in high school, Colin is like 3 or 4 years older than me. 3 years older than me. And like, I kind of always looked up to him because he was playing in hardcore bands at the time. And I was like, he would play trombone in band and I was on the drum line, but I still felt like, you know, he is the better drummer because I was like really into like the hardcore scene that was going around during that time. And I just always looked up to him as a drummer and like to learn his parts and sit down with him and like see how he felt about his own beats. He was like kind of unconfident, but I was like, you know, I would tell him like, this is hard. This is hard shit you're playing. You know, this is not easy. and it was just, I feel like Colin has a lot more diversity than I, but I'm also very open to like whatever they want me to do. Mm-hmm. So like if we're recording and I play something and Sam says, change this. And it's like foreign to me, you know, it just seems weird. I will be willing to try it because usually that leads to like some of the better sounding, you know, beats or like, you know, it just meshes well with the band. It like, I don't know.
I think just coming home from the tour last year, like our big summer tour last year, it was just immediate that like the new songs we were working on, Bryson, it felt like Bryson had been playing with us for so much longer mm-hmm. and like understood the weird like language of this band, like almost immediately.
Yeah. I mean, from even the beginning of the tour, I feel like.
Yeah.
But, yeah, there's like a looseness, I think, to the music that we make now.
Totally.
With Bryson mm-hmm. that like was maybe not quite there before. Mm. It's like the only way I can think of to put it.
Colin likes to play fast and straight mm-hmm. and mm-hmm. hard.
Yeah.
And Bryson's open to mixing it up a little bit more.
Leaving a lot of space and then just adding a little bit of complex, but like playing his beats and going back and playing the old songs, it's like a workout for me because it's really high energy and it's really fast pace, and that's not what I'm used to. I like to let the guitars and the bass breathe a little mm-hmm. bit and add a lot of like just random, you know, attacks, mm-hmm. which I didn't feel like that was a lot of like organic movement in Colin's drumming.
Yeah, totally.
You know, it was very structured and mechanical.
He's just an amazing drummer.
Yeah.
And he
right.
wants to actually lay back.
Yeah.
As like he doesn't want the drums to be in the foreground. Literally and like on record. So Bryson's more open to like laying the drums kind of like lead the way. And Colin, I don't think really wanted that to be the drums role mm-hmm. in a band.
Interesting to hear. Cause like leading the way as it, and then when you say leading the way, it sounds like you're playing not less, but like you're leaving more open spaces.
Yeah. More like express like beats that express what the rest of the band is doing.
Yeah.
Rather than just like being the spine for the rest of the band.
You know?
It's like almost like another vocal.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's a good way to put it.
Yeah.
I feel like it's this weird paradox where the more you play, the more something becomes like a background element. Whereas like if there's spaces open and you just like
the drums.
Yeah. Here I am. Yeah.
That's exactly how it is. Cause like as a listener, like the drum is the beat. And so
it's
like,
it's also loud.
And so if you take it away at any point, it like throws you off mm-hmm. as a listener, and you're like put off kilter to whatever you're
totally
hearing. So I think it's interesting that if you're leaning into that, I think you're leaning more into like the chaos part of this band.
If you're like trying to pause a lot and also everything is chaotic all the time,
yeah,
it results in interesting things.
Yeah. And that also makes sense that like you've like everything like became very like you became more confident like what this band was, because like if you start off like on a tour, that's when you become really tight as musicians, just because that's what tour does to you, because mm-hmm. you're playing like every night for a period of however long.
5 weeks.
It definitely makes you realize that, like, never mind. I actually did not have a fully formed thought, so I'm just not going to say the abstract and absurd things that I was imagining.
I mean, well, also this band tours a lot. Like, I think of a lot of the bands that I've talked to on this podcast, like, I think you guys tour more often than, like, any other band I've talked to. Like, it seems
especially
like
recently.
Yeah, the last, like, 18 months, I would say.
I mean, I would be on tour always if I could.
And that makes sense to me, like seeing how like you love the live performance, but you also have toured in like a lot of different places, and I'm wondering how receptive people are to your band in like depending on like geographically like where you are.
Much more than they are here. Everywhere else, pretty much. Like whenever we, I mean, maybe not Texas. I feel like we don't like have much of a reception in Texas, but once we get through the South, a US tour is like playing really good shows and like to better reception than we get here like most of the time.
When we do play shows here, if people show up, they're usually pretty excited about what we're doing, but we very rarely get asked to play like shows that people show up to.
Yeah, I think that there's like a
for lack of a more diplomatic.
There's like a social and political aspect to the LA music scene that I think doesn't work for us as much as just going out somewhere and doing the thing. Like that feels more natural. So I think we take better to it, and like people out there take better to us for some reason. I don't know.
There was a. Last year sometime, maybe it was even 2016, there was a list of the 100 best bands in LA on some, like, whatever dumb no one reads it blog.
100 best bands?
100 best
that's
bands.
Not a, that's not a good article.
Yeah, 100 best bands in LA, and we were not on it. Oh. I could not name 100 bands in LA. So, like, you gotta imagine the person's, like, going on Bandcamp and typing Los Angeles. And they're like, I'm going to list every single band in LA, but not us. We're not one of the 100 best bands.
I mean, I was thinking about this the other day. I kind of feel like we are a band that doesn't, like, you'll see a lot of times like bands referred to as like a, like an LA based band. And I feel like we, even though we live here, we aren't really like, I don't know, like it seems like we aren't based anywhere really. Because we tour so much and because like the people that like us are spread out everywhere.
Much love to all of our friends here.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, not meaning to hate on LA. Like I love LA, but, I love LA.
I love it.
But it does feel like I don't mind not being on the 100 best bands in LA list because like,
it's just funny.
Yeah, it is funny.
There's so many bands I never heard of. Yeah. On the list, which was crazy to me. Yeah. And I feel like we play so many shows. It's like, how did we avoid this person's radar? It's just that, like, the algorithms are what boggle my mind.
Just by pure chance, you think you would.
Yeah, just by, like, 100, like, picking them out of a hat.
Do you think there's an area that, like, you, like, have the best, like, best reception, like people like know what you are, know what you're about, and they're like, yes, this is like, we're down for this show. Because like, I know you've like toured in Japan, and I think you've done a Europe tour too, and I'm wondering if
not yet. Yeah. And we've actually surprising. I feel like we've talked to people and they've been like, yeah, I don't really do math rock or something.
Yeah, right? Yeah. I have emailed some European booking agents and they're like, I like what you guys are doing, but I don't really book math rock bands.
You're not a math rock.
Oh, I know.
Yeah, we have no lack of confidence there. Like, we know what we are.
And it ain't math
rock. But if someone wants to call us math rock, that's their prerogative. That's totally whatever, fine.
And it is the thing that we get called the most.
Yeah.
So,
really?
Yeah. Yeah. I think just, I don't know why.
We don't change time signatures.
The funny thing is,
you're not mathy.
We're in 4/4 like pretty much constantly, yeah. Which is pretty funny.
We just play weirdly,
yeah,
with each other.
But that's not math rock. Interesting.
I know.
Huh.
But I wouldn't last a minute in a math rock band. Not even a minute.
I would last a couple minutes maybe, but I don't know. Yeah. Not my passion, but I think like there are a couple places like we always get a good reception in Canada. People are amazing and love us there for some reason. And then Georgia, we always get like a good reception. And then on the East Coast, like Philly, and we had a really good show in New York this time, which is kind of weird and crazy. Felt good.
It's cool because when we get to play to people elsewhere, we play to people who are basically strangers and they have no expectations of us, and we have no expectations of them. Mm-hmm. And then when what we're doing resonates with like people who are very superficially varying, it's very cool. Like, it's like, we played a show in Indianapolis on this last tour to basically no one. It was a dance, like a DJ night, and we were playing in the middle of two DJs, and there was no one there to watch us. Uh-huh. There were people outside on the patio who were just at the bar to hang out, which is totally reasonable. But then someone, we went after the set, we had a fun time, we got off stage, and we went out and sat on the patio, and after like 10 minutes, a person walked up to us and was like, who do I give money to buy a record? Yeah. It's like, who was watching us? There was no one in this like 200 capacity room.
They heard you though.
They heard us.
Yeah, she was really intense about it too. Yeah.
Who do I give my money to?
Who's going to take my money?
Yeah.
Who's going to take my money? So that's cool. That's like my favorite thing, I think. Yeah. When it's like, you just do the thing in a vacuum kind of. And it's like, if people are into it, that's cool. Mm-hmm. That's my favorite part of touring, I think.
Yeah.
Cool. Can you all play another thing for us, please?
Yes.
Ringtone?
Yeah. We'll try that one again.
That guitar part really does legitimately sound like a ringtone at certain points.
I think that was my thought process.
And it's disorienting. It's like at the beginning because you're like, oh, there's a phone.
Yeah. There's a dial-up modem.
Yeah. So this is for all of you. What's your favorite song to play in this band? And why?
My favorite song, I really like playing a lot of the songs, actually. We have a new song that we're not playing, but I think it's my new favorite song to play. But otherwise, I do like the one we just played quite a lot.
Mm. Yeah,
it makes me feel good. I don't know. I don't really have an explanation other than I feel good playing it.
It's music, man. I feel like usually it's the new ones that are my favorites, just because they're like, they feel fresh. Yeah.
They got something.
Yeah. So, yeah, the one he's talking about is a new favorite, but also, like, the next one we're going to play probably is, like, my favorite to play.
It's Colin's favorite.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Really? It's called Model. It's also a new one. Mm-hmm. It was, like, the first of the new batch. Like, it was kind of being formed when we recorded the last album, but it wasn't ready yet, so.
Now it's ready.
Now it's ready. Oh, yeah.
My favorite Hula Hoop.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Why?
It was like when I got the tracks to learn, I had 3 weeks to learn them. I was like, I'm going to learn this one first. This one is fun to play, and it's really straightforward. It just feels organic to me. All the other songs were just so hard. I avoided them. And yeah, I don't know. I just like the way it grooves. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it just feels good.
Yeah, my favorite is Model, which we'll play next.
Y'all just like the new stuff.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. That type of band.
It's fresh. Boring.
Well, yeah. It's like the most us right now.
Yeah.
I think that's what it is for me.
That's really fair. I mean, I think that's the battle that every band is dealing with, is that they, when they're playing songs, they're playing a past version of themselves.
Right.
Yeah.
And like, we're not like, for the most part, no one cares enough about us for them to like demand older songs.
Yeah.
So it's like, we just do whatever we want.
Yeah. Believe it or not, we're not the kind of band that plays the hits.
And then what's the best show y'all have ever played? And what's the weirdest thing that's ever happened in a show? We already kind of talked about weird stuff, but to your memory, what's
Colin like? Going to the hospital is pretty weird. Best show we've ever played. Well, one of our very early shows was opening for the band Para Ubu, who are like a proto punk band.
Big deal. Big deal band.
And for some reason, someone let us play with them. And it was like our fifth show or something.
Yeah, I was at that show. It was great.
That was like the first time we played to, it was like a sold out 300-person crowd. And mm-hmm. it was like, why are we up here? But it was sick. It was great. That was, I felt that one pretty hard. I think it's probably a better show since then, though. Mm.
Yeah, the past couple of times we played in Olympia have been really special. Because we have a pretty strong like friend group there, and like the second to last time we played there, like in December or November or something,
like late November.
We played with this band O Rose, who we love, and we played with this band Thick Paint, who is from Omaha, who we also love, and they all know each other, and there's just like this really insane, love was in the air, you know, and so it was a really good feeling, and there was like a bunch of people there, and everyone was having a good time. And it just felt like the reason why you do music. Yeah. Mm. That's what pops into my head.
Playing New York this last time was maybe my favorite show we've played.
Yeah. Why? That was really good.
It was just I don't really look at the audience when we perform at a venue.
Like purposefully.
I just like, I not, hard to say. It's instinctual, I think. But yeah, probably part of it's self-consciousness, but I just like don't really pay attention to what's happening aside from myself. Mm-hmm. But in the moments that I did, I looked and it was like people there, and that's not always the case, especially in New York.
Yeah,
so it was
pretty
cool.
Much never in New York.
Yeah, and yeah. We just played really well, and everyone was excited about us, and it made me excited about us, and a lot of friends were there, and it just felt really good. It felt really, really good. There's too many good shows. There's a lot of good shows. Playing any show in Japan.
I liked our show in Toronto that we played recently.
That's a runner-up for me for sure, too.
What's the band called Slurry. It was really good and just...
Good vibes.
Just a very good place to play at. It was really cool. A lot of people came out and they were like extremely just friendly. Just it was a good show. A lot of really good musicians.
What's a weird thing?
Yeah,
James, what's your best?
Yeah, what's your best, Jim?
Best? I don't know. I don't think I think about the shows as being the best. I think about it more like the tours as
as units.
Yeah, as units. And that tour we did with Thick Paint and Anna was really good. And this last tour was pretty special. Yeah.
My pick for weird show would be when we were in Japan, we had 5 shows booked in Japan, and where I'm going with this.
Yeah.
We met a guy who you met, Shigeru.
Yes.
Lulo Ningen.
Yeah.
Yes.
We met him our first day there, and he was like, "Do you want more shows?" And
we had
like,
a show later in the our fourth show or something was with Lulo Ningen.
Yeah. And so he came to our first show, and we met him, and he was like, "Do you want more shows?" And we were like, "Yes." And then he booked 3 more shows in like a day.
Wow.
Like last minute, and one of them was in Hiroshima, and it was playing with exclusively teenagers playing like singer-songwriter music. And so it was us and then like 4.
Wait, were you first?
We were in the middle. Okay. I think we were third.
Maybe we might have been last.
Yeah. And yeah, so it was us and a bunch of Japanese teens.
That was sweet.
It was very sweet, and it was very weird.
But it was just like just them. They had a couple of their friends.
They had this like sign stuff.
Yeah, it was the closest I've ever felt to feeling like a celebrity, which is just very strange. And they were playing the same two Weezer songs in between every band.
Which kept playing Say It Ain't So. Yeah. What was the other one?
It was Blue Album stuff. It was just like they started with Say It Ain't So and then just went through the Blue Album until the next person played.
That's
and it was just like an incredibly surreal experience. And there was like five people there, I think.
Yeah.
So big, like we played a lot of like we played mostly real venues in Japan, no matter what the show was like. And so this was like that. We played like a kind of an echo, like an echo size venue, I would say.
In Hiroshima?
Maybe a little bigger.
Yeah.
To five people, and it sounded great, and everyone was a teenager. It was just like really bizarre.
And then in Osaka, we played in a room smaller than this one. No. But it had like an incredibly large PA and a full lighting rig. But it was smaller than this room, like not even including the part up the stairs right there, just this room.
Yeah.
It was like if you put a wall like right there and took it back.
Mm-hmm.
So small, but it fully professional everything.
Weird.
I can't think of anything weird. Is weird stuff not happened to us?
Dallas.
It always happens to us.
Dallas.
That's a different kind of weird.
Yeah. We weren't a part of that weirdness.
What is? Oh, Dallas. Dallas is weird.
We were just spectators.
Yeah.
We got searched for a banana on the way into the States from BC on this last tour.
Tom bought a banana before we crossed the border.
Yeah, because I wanted to eat something healthy.
You fool.
It was a bad decision.
You're going to take that banana.
They didn't take it, though.
They just
searched us.
They made sure it wasn't a Filipino banana.
Yeah.
I guess bananas from the Philippines.
Not allowed.
Not allowed in the U.S.
No good. Yeah. No Filipino bananas here.
Don't know why.
It's because of the bugs. It's not the banana. It's like what could be on the banana,
right?
Mm-hmm. That you're bringing in.
Yeah, it wasn't from the Philippines. The banana was like
it was from Canada.
Kosher banana,
because we were coming from Canada. But yeah, that was weird.
I don't think we've ever been like antagonized as a band at a show by like another band.
Yeah, no tomatoes have been thrown at us.
That could be fun, though.
That would be fun.
Like, why don't you just have a show and encourage that?
Yeah.
We did play a show one time at a place. I will not mention any names, but one of the bands we played with, the guy also ran sound, and his band was incredibly weird, and his singing style was incredibly weird, and he, after the show, he was talking to the other touring band at the show, and he was like, he was just like gushing, and then he turns to me and he was like, you guys, you have an interesting voice. That was like all he said. I was like, dude, your band is crazy.
Yeah.
That's I guess that's as weird as it gets.
No, fair enough. How do you guys feel about this? Feel good?
Yeah, okay? Great. Yeah.
Where can people find your music online?
Throw a dart at the internet.
Okay. We'll do that. That's how you get there.
There's a .com website. There's a Bandcamp, Spotify, whatever. However people use music. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I have Spotify. I'm a bad person. I recuse physical platforms.
You don't care about giving people money. Just want to
I guess.
Here's my quarter of a cent for you.
Yeah, but I do listen to the same things over and over again quite a lot.
Okay, then.
Adds up to a dollar.
Cool. And
record stores.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, like not every record store, but like if you go to Amoeba, they should have like a copy of our album.
Oh.
I think.
Yeah, probably. I imagine so.
How does that happen? How do you get your record in a store?
Label guy.
Distribution.
Label guy? Okay.
Yeah.
There's like the label and a distributor, and sometimes the label is a distributor, which complicates things. Like, for example, Stone Brewing distributes beer from a lot of smaller breweries.
Yes.
But then they themselves are, in theory, a microbrewery, but not really.
Not really.
So you'll see a Stone truck like driving around, but they'll be carrying tons of other beers. So that's like same thing with music.
Yeah, you can find our record at the Stone Brewery.
Yeah,
any location
exclusively.
That's where you should be selling records. Yeah. In liquor stores across the country.
Yeah, or at Starbucks locations. I don't think they do that anymore. They don't do like the
Pure
music or whatever they used to do.
They did. They used to, and then they realized they didn't have to do that anymore.
I guess that was they. I think they stopped doing it shortly after Sonic Youth did one.
Yeah.
I wonder if that had anything to do with it.
Cool.
Hmm.
Can y'all play the last song for us, please?
Yeah. I think that's how Norah Jones like got super famous.
She was a coffee shop like musician, like legitimately.
Yeah, yeah. And then I think her album was sold at Starbucks.
Yeah.
And then she exploded. Legitimately, I think.
She exploded. It was horrible. Such a tragedy.
The jazz scene has not stopped talking about it since.
Oh, Colin left a show mid-show one time.
Oh yeah, that was a weird one.
Really?
I wasn't in the band at that time, but it's my favorite Media Jeweler show, I think.
Wait, why?
He didn't like how it sounded.
Oh no.
And he left, and it was delightful to behold because it was the most chaotic I've seen this band be.
Yeah. I and the bass player both jumped in the pool at the house in the middle of the set, and then like maybe two-thirds of the way through, Colin literally got up, put his drumsticks and his cymbals in a cymbal bag, and walked out of the house. So that was pretty cool.
And was gone for a long time. Like I assumed that he had left like permanently.
Wow.
He just left us to like
deal with it.
Here you go.
The artist is back. An artifice of a baseline shift. Haptic survival of the virtual domain. Terms of the conditions, a bare republic. The end of the region sees nowhere in sight. Functional performance, conscious functionary, alone. Suggesting confusion. A frictionless existence. A frictionless existence. A frictionless existence. Everything's a shade of green. Semantic infrastructure without any function. The model society, a flawless machine. Icons of subversion, facetious approval, insincere fiction, demonstration, 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 playlist, inventive past desire, made by numbers, lived in style, stated proof of concept, trick up cannibal procedure, calculus clockwork.
Felt good.
Great.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to The Living Room. This week our guest was Media Jeweler, and you can find them online at mediajeweler.bandcamp.com. The Living Room was created by Lucas Cathy and Karina Taylor, recorded by Masters and Jeremy Scott at the Palisades, and produced by Hannah Mraz. You can listen to us on SoundCloud, iTunes, or whatever podcast app you prefer. If you have questions or would like to chat with us, email theliveroompodcast@gmail.com or hit us up on Twitter or Instagram. Special thanks goes to the residents of the Palisades for dealing with our noise, and of course, thank you for listening.